Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton.
Good morning, everybody.
Hello.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
All right.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. You good? Good.
Yeah.
Good. I think it smells nice outside today. It smells of
air.
You know, just fresh air.
That makes for a nice change.
Yeah.
Mm. It's been smelling like rain the last few weeks.
Well, I think rain smells nice as well, but when it rains consistently, you can't even smell the rain because it's all just wet. Mm. But, you know, it just sort of, it smelled of morning this morning, I thought.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Someone commented on last week's podcast being like, why are Peter and Ashton dressed for winter? Because we're both wearing jumpers when it's August. And what people don't seem to understand is that this year we have not had a summer. We have had rain, rain, and more rain. Yeah. And I think the maximum temperature we've had over the like July and August so far is like 21 degrees.
Yeah.
We did have a couple of hot weekends.
But that was way back in like May and June.
Was it?
Yeah. Because we went to the beach a few times in like May.
Oh, yeah. And that was really warm.
And that was nice. But yeah, since then,
nothing in July.
Nothing.
August. I mean, today it's meant to get to, it doesn't say on that PC, it was like 21 degrees is what it was telling me. And I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either.
For a second.
But I came into the office this morning and the aircon was on. Blasting cold.
It was chilly.
It is a bit cold in the office, yeah.
It's meant to be a high of 23 today.
Mm.
And cloudy
not
all
true.
Day. And then it's going to rain tonight.
Brilliant.
Goody.
Love rain. I've just been wearing my jacket indoors all week because it's just been a bit cold and it's comfortable to wear jackets indoors at the moment because you just can't escape the badness.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a weather podcast, though, guys. This is a video game podcast.
Yeah.
Each and every week, we're sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor. They help us keep the lights on here. Still no Dead Island 2 the Spider in here, I don't think.
Well, him and all of his babies have disappeared from the toilet next door.
They're dispersed into the building.
Where have they gone?
Every time I go in, I like check around to see if they're like in any place where any part of my skin is going to touch.
In the toilet.
In the toilet. I check everywhere because they've all disappeared now and I don't know where they've gone.
They'll show up when you need them most.
Mm. Yeah.
As is their wont.
Just like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Spider-Them are everywhere.
They are.
Under the toilet seat.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a sponsor this week, Peter. I think you've got it written down there.
I have. Hey, do you know what I flipping hate?
What?
Did you just look at the sponsor there, Ashley?
No, I don't know.
Good. Do you know what I flipping hate?
What do you hate?
Non-fungible tokens. Non-fungible tokens.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, like Bored Chimp digital art and stuff like that.
Yeah. They're a Scroogle. We don't know what they are.
Yeah, they're a Scroogle. It drives me insane. I get really cross about it. Well, there's a game coming out like next week or something by EA Sports all about that. That's right. Maddening NFT 24. It's coming next week.
Cool.
Maddening NFT.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that anything to do with a sport? Because EA like to make sport games.
It does sound a bit like their other series, Madden NFL 24.
But it's not.
But it's nothing to do with that, actually.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
What do you do in it?
Yeah.
You just go on social media and see people with hexagonal profile pictures and go, flip. Stop it.
That's so maddening.
Hate those guys.
Yeah.
So I've been playing, we've all been playing that game.
Yeah, for free.
For a while.
It's like a sim game, though. Like, so we've been playing it in real life. We've been living that.
Right. But which isn't fun. Whereas this will be fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah?
And in the game, your character walks over to a desk, sits down, and then it's full screen of a social media platform. So it's almost as real as just having the actual social media platform on your full screen anyway.
Mm. Okay.
But you know that actually sitting in front of that, there's a virtual character going, oh, I'm so cross.
Okay.
So it's a really immersive sim game.
So is this game pro or anti-NFT?
It's anti-NFT.
Okay.
Because they're maddening NFTs and you are so cross that people have got their, you know, they probably have Bitcoin as well, or Dogecoin.
Mm.
And, probably Dogecoin. It feels like you're sort of drawing, the game would draw attention and promote NFTs though, even if it's anti-NFT. You
know? Well, it just
if it's made by EA, maybe
though.
There's lots of like microtransactions, so that'll put you off.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know.
It's also maddening.
Maybe the reason that there is some confusion over
the
messaging here is because it's not real.
But it is real the way I feel when I scroll through the internet and see them. I do get maddening.
Looking at that in my leisure time, I was so excited. No, we're not sponsored by maddening NFT
24.
We're sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com, where for at any tier, you can support us. That was a weird sentence, wasn't it?
Where for
any tier, you can support us and you help us keep the lights on here legitimately. And you're basically just supporting the things that you enjoy. And that means a lot to us and lets us do all sorts of stuff. Plus, you get loads of rewards as well, depending on which tier you go for, including...
Submitting
questions to this podcast. Worst games ever. Early. 2 days before everyone else. Weirdest games ever. A week before everyone else. More rewards coming soon, hopefully. We'll let you know in due course. Yep. So go to patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Those are the true sponsors of this podcast, our lovely patrons. A little bit of housekeeping before we move on. There is a video on the channel this week, Ashton Matthews.
There is. It is a weirdest games ever week. If you're a patron, you would have already seen this last week. But hey, why not watch it again on YouTube? Why not watch it again?
Why not?
It's called Stupid Invaders, the game is. And I'm talking like you now.
Yeah. Yoda.
And it's a pretty good one, I would say. It's very weird.
Where he said monkey with diarrhea. That was really funny.
That was so
that
funny.
That was so
really
funny.
And you can watch that on YouTube. Yeah. Tomorrow at the time of the release of this podcast. You can also go to our shop, triplejumpshop.com, buy some merch there, and go to our website, triplejump. Ooh, it's so shiny and new and looks fantastic. And you'll find links to all of our stuff there, the YouTube, the Twitch, the Discord, the Cameo, all of that stuff. So go over there, triplejump. Time for our first question.
It is. It's from Nikki P, who says, hello, Bap. I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22. And I'm also vibing with Torgal. Did I say that right, Ashton? Vibing.
Yep.
I'm vibing with...
Oh, I thought it was Vibong.
Vibing with Torgal or Torgal.
Torgal.
Torgal. The wolf pet slash companion in Final Fantasy XVI. That's 16.
Yes. Thank you.
He protect, he attack, but most importantly, he gets pats.
Yes.
Who is your favorite companion video game animal friend? Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki.
The first thing I wrote was not Treecko. From The Last Guardian. Yeah. That's possibly my least favorite.
Yeah,
video
he's
game
really
animal.
Annoying.
He doesn't do what you want him to do.
No.
Oh, but it's like real life. Like, you know, your dog won't always do what. Nope. All right, then. Why in the game is there not a button where I have to go and like piss against a tree every 3 hours? Or, you know, X to breathe in, square to breathe out. Realistic, right? No.
Poorly coded.
Bad animal. It was the USP of that game as well, and it was badly done. So I have got some actual answers, though.
Okay.
Obligatory mention of Spark the Dragonfly.
Sure.
If I'd not had him through my childhood, I would have had to walk up to every gem manually and touch it.
It's the worst when Sparks is dead because you've been playing poorly, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hate it.
Terrible.
But really, I think my favorite video game animal companion that I can... think of. I was struggling really, but Dog Meat.
I like Dog Meat. One.
He's just
he's a good boy.
He looks so happy all the time, and he is happy to just be your friend
and
do
walk
what
into
you
traps
do.
And walk set off mines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And you know, I like to think somehow that it's always the same Dog Meat across all of the Fallout games.
It
in
is.
Which Dog Meat appears.
I don't he's, think a, he's like a cent-
it has to
he's
be.
Like a kind of a deity.
Yeah, he is. Mm-hmm. So those are my answers. Not Treecko is the main one. Ashton?
I have one, but I don't know if it technically counts as an animal because I don't think it's an animal. They're animals. But it's the rots from Cain and Bridge of Spirits.
Yeah.
They're not animals, but what are they? Don't know. Just little dudes.
Really? Stuffed toys.
Little dudes you can put hats on. Yeah. And the minute I saw them in the trailers, I was smitten. And then I was even more smitten when I played the game and I could put little hats on them and they would just run around with me. And I had like one that was a fox and one that was wearing a little helmet. It was just, I love them. They're so cute. And they make me happy whenever I see them. Mm-hmm. And then they also look like my cat because they are all black, just like my cat is. Yeah.
Big coal eyes.
Yeah. So yeah, I love the rots. I don't remember them being particularly helpful. Well, actually, they do turn into a big slug, don't they? In the game.
Oh yeah, they do.
They become big slug.
A big sort of dragon thing.
Yeah, and then they attack enemies for you as well. Ages, so that's good. I can't remember now. Yeah. And I don't remember if they like pick things up, like Pikmin. I don't know if they do. I think maybe they just...
That's been a long time. I was trying to remember what it is that they do actually do. Yeah. Do you just rescue them?
You collect them.
Well, you collect them and they wear hats.
Did
and
they
then...
do stuff in the puzzles though? Did they like...
Maybe.
Open doors and stuff?
I don't really remember, but I just like having them around. Yeah. They're just great to be.
They're just good friends.
With. Yeah, exactly.
Just reliable pals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Controversial opinion. Mm-hmm. Not too fussed about Torgal.
No.
No. It's cool to have a dog friend there all the time, but like, I don't think he's that helpful in combat. He does some cool story stuff, and there's a great line that one of the characters says that I shared on Twitter the other day where Torgal, something happens to Torgal, and he says, "Oh, don't worry about Torgal, but why, this very morn he had his nose buried in my nuts."
Oh yeah.
Which is great. And the delivery of the line as well, the nuts, is anyone who's played the game will know that line because it's just comes out of nowhere. And I enjoyed that. But he often doesn't accompany you. Like when you're back at the base area, he's not walking around with you. And when you're going to certain settlements, he's not there. So there's large portions of the game where like I'm not even really aware that he's even with me until I'm in battle and I see him just zoom past and bite someone. And yes, you can pet Torgal, and that's great. And I'm not really sure what they could have done to really endear Torgal to me even more than they have, because lots of people love Torgal. But I could take Torgal. I'd miss Torgal if Torgal was gone. I'm not too fussed about Torgal. Torgal's all right.
Would you be happier if Torgal was a cat?
Like a panther thing? Mm. I mean, my actual answer may well back that up, potentially. Okay. But I think Red 13 wasn't a pet, but was far better in Final Fantasy VII. That's a sentient human being then.
He is technically a companion game friend, animal friend.
Yeah. Red 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose Nanaki. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because he's sentient doesn't mean he's not an animal.
Well, he's my friend.
Like Goofy is technically an animal.
He's my best friend.
But then what is Pluto, you know? That's where the questions become.
An affront to God.
Yeah.
Put him out of his misery.
Yeah.
My choice is actually a slightly weird one, because I used to go around to my friend's house who had a World of Warcraft subscription.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would play World of Warcraft and usually create a new character every single time I went around. And I liked to play as a dwarven hunter, which meant that you could charm certain creatures to become a friend, a little pet. Mm-hmm. And then you could command that pet and that pet would level up. And I always went for a snow leopard. Because they're cool. Mm-hmm. And so I always had a little snow leopard companion. I think I probably called it Snowy, something really uninventive. Or
Leper.
Leppy. Leper. Snowy Leppy. And that's my favorite one. Can't even remember the name of it, but that snow leopard that I would always persuade to kill things for me, including fellow snow leopards World of Warcraft. That was my favorite animal.
You've reminded me of a very, very similar pet that I had in a similar game. I had Guild Wars, which is free to play, so I didn't have to pay a subscription.
Neither did I.
I used to choose like ranger, hunter, man, whatever it was that could charm animals, and I had a not a snow leopard. It was like a mountain lion, I think.
Okay,
and that was called Maul. No Star Maul. Wars influence there. Wow. Maul, as in what a leopard would do to you.
Yeah, maul you.
It would maul you. He was called Maul, which I thought was pretty cool.
Wow.
And he would, you know, kill all the goblins and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I loved him very much. I'd forgotten all about him.
Go and get him. That's he's still waiting for you on a server somewhere. Waiting,
yeah.
My RuneScape character still has, I think, at least two cats in the bank because they were members only at that time. You could only get a cat if you were a member. And all it would do is just like toddle along after you and follow you about. But when you're a scrub, you're not allowed to use your cat anymore. So it's just an item. Oh, so it's sad. Just in the bank and has been in the bank for about 12 years.
My DS still has my Nintendogs on them.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
And I feel bad for them, but they never responded to me anyway.
They're rubbish. Nintendogs are rubbish.
I had a Chihuahua called Bob and then I had a Yorkshire Terrier and I can't remember what I called that dog. But I remember the Chihuahua called Bob because I remember being in a car journey and just shouting Bob into my DS.
Bob.
And my mum was like, can you just give it a rest? Can you play something else?
Is it like when I was trying to do the launch video for the 3DS and I was trying to use the
And we were all sat
dog.
Quietly and just Ben just kept going, dog.
It wouldn't listen. It didn't work. That's Nintendogs is one that completely passed me by. But I tell you what, people went crazy for Nintendogs.
I went crazy for Nintendogs.
Just get a dog.
Yeah.
Wasn't allowed one.
Just get a
just
dog.
Bob
you weren't
the
allowed
Chihuahua.
A virtual dog either. He didn't want to play with
no,
you.
No, he didn't want to play
it's
with me.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
It's time to do a section what we have never done before.
Mm.
I can't read it because it's in a language I don't understand.
Oh, but luckily I do.
Okay.
I've written it in woman.
Ooh. Go on then, woman.
It is called What We Play In.
Oh, that's not what that says. It's, what was it?
What we play in.
W-P.
Sorry. I'm still learning woman. Ashton
what
is trying to
play in.
Teach me what women play.
What women are playing.
Well, first I'm going to ask what man playing.
Yeah.
That being you.
What are you playing, Peter?
Played a couple of things this week. I have mostly, well, exclusively at home, been continuing with Crash Bandicoot 4. Mm. And last night I was getting really, really pissed off. I've had a really good time with it so far. And definitely, as I've said, I think the past couple of times I mentioned it, I've been doing a lot better than I did the first time I played it. But so you go through the game in a linear fashion, one level after the next. But in the levels, you can find these little VHS tapes as you go. And when you get those, you can play through the in context, you're like watching the tape playback. And it's a video that was taken of Crash in 1996 or whatever, when he was a young bandicoot, when he was still an experiment. And he's doing all these tests in the lab. And I really like those. And I feel like I'm not moving on to the next level of the main game until I found the tape from that level and played through that. What you have to do, though, is get to the location of the tape in one life. You're not allowed to die, otherwise it disappears. Right. So I was restarting over and over again. I'm about three levels from the end of the game where things get really, really hard. And I was just struggling to get to the tape in one go.
Oh,
no. And getting angrier and angrier. I've never been a controller thrower, but sometimes I'm a sofa puncher.
Okay.
I don't get up and turn around and punch it.
I'll punch
yeah.
just next.
Yeah, just do a thump.
Flip
sake.
You never know when you might
yeah.
need that.
But it's mostly my fault. The game's pretty tight. Like, the controls are tight, so it's normally me just being impatient. But,
skill issue. Skill issue.
Exactly. User error.
Sounds like a crap game to me.
Yeah, rubbish. So I've been having mostly a really good time with that, apart from last night towards the end of my session. But also, since the last podcast, I have played at an arcade.
What? Without us, friends?
Yeah, that's right.
What is that?
What the heck?
Some family came up to visit on the weekend, and we went to, it's not called Ghetto Golf anymore. It's called Golf Fang or something.
Golf Fang.
Yeah, Golf Fang, I think.
Oh.
But it's still Ghetto Golf. It's exactly the same. All the tracks, I was going to say. All the tracks are still there.
Yes.
Including the Jeremy Kyle
set. The courses.
Which is no longer on TV, Jeremy Kyle. But they have some arcades there, some arcade cabinets. So I played House of the Dead something. 4, I think it was.
Nice.
And Ms. Pac-Man.
Ms.
We don't comment on her marital status. She is Ms. Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about it. So that was fun. Had a good time playing some arcade games. And I always, whenever I go to an arcade, I feel like I should do this more often.
Yeah.
And then I don't ever go back.
Because they're not conveniently located.
Too expensive.
And they cost too much money.
I only go to them when I'm already there. You know, I'm doing something else, or I'm in town, I've gone out for food, and it's like, oh, there's the arcade just across there. All right, let's go in.
Mm.
Or at the seaside. But I would never go out of my way to just go and play some arcade games. But yeah, I had a really good time with that. I like some House of the Dead. Nice. Don't know the difference between any of them. You do. You're quite familiar, aren't you, with House of the Dead?
House of the Dead. Well, I mean, House of the Dead 4 is the one that has the Uzi.
Right.
House of the Dead, it was probably 2 or 3 that you were playing. Is that the one with Help, We've Got to Control the Something in the City?
Yes.
With the that's probably 1 or 2.
Oh,
one,
right.
I think.
I thought it was one of the sequels, but maybe not. I don't know.
If you're going through the little town, you go through the church and stuff. I think that one was on Dreamcast. I know that much. So
he's such a professional. House of the Dead nerd.
I mean, not really. Just I have a passing knowledge, and I really enjoy the voice acting in all of them. So
they are all incredible voice acting.
Ashton, what have you been playing?
I played two things this week. I rolled credits on Pikmin 4.
Nice.
But then there's like probably another like 4 hours of game after that. But my Switch was stolen by my boyfriend.
Oh.
I swear I must be
You right. can't say that in my presence. Sorry, the victim of an actual theft recently.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So sorry.
I thought for a second, I was like, oh my God, your Switch
No, it didn't
stolen.
Get stolen. My boyfriend has been away this week and he took it with him. Mm. And he was, and I was like, oh, I want to play Pikmin. And he was like, well, I'm going to be on my own. And I was like, oh, fine.
That's true.
Whatever. Maybe I have a PC and also have a PlayStation. I wanted the Switch.
He does have his magic PSP as well.
He does have his magic PSP a controller that he can connect to his phone and all kinds of
and
things.
And a little adapter that's like a little dock thing. It's amazing for the Switch.
Wow, yeah. Or just digging out MB now.
Yeah, he's got so much stuff.
He's got cool things. I wasn't having a go. I think it's impressive.
Yeah, I do.
I just don't travel. I don't need it.
No, the size of his backpack is just, it's just full of just random bits of gaming stuff. And, yeah.
Yeah,
four pairs of trousers for 4 days, and then also a bunch.
Hang on, now we need to dig into trousers. How many pairs of trousers?
He backed 4 pairs of trousers.
That's ludicrous.
Plus a pair of pajama trousers, plus a pair of tracksuit bottoms for like four
days.
Man
wants to be clean and comfy.
What's he doing?
He's just working in an office.
Pissing his pants all day.
I know,
well,
exactly.
It's 6 p.m. time to clock off and
piss
poo
my
pants.
Yeah. So while he's been away with my Pikmin 4 Switch, I've been playing Spiritfarer. I started playing Talos Principle, but then I was like, nope, can't be asked. That's too much work. I couldn't figure out one puzzle and then I turned the game off because I was like, I can't do this today. And then I got into Spiritfarer, which I've been really enjoying. Hang out with my cat. Daffodil is the name of the cat. That's just
Were your real
name.
Cats jealous?
No, they are just raging to go outside all the time. So
Why was your answer to question one not Daffodil?
Well, because I wanted to talk. Well,
cat.
I was thinking about that, but then I thought, well, I'll talk about Spiritfarer.
Don't really know how she feels about Daffodil yet.
No, I mean Daffodil is very cute, but every time it makes cat noises, I think it's my cat making a noise. Sometimes it'll squeak, and I'll be looking around like, what's wrong, child? Where are you? And it turns out they're not even in the house. They've gone. And it's just the cat on the TV making squeaky sounds. But I'm really enjoying Spiritfarer. I like building my boat. I'm a bit confused about what I'm supposed to be doing at the moment, but that's just because I think I've just got myself all spun around. I played it for like an hour last night and then I was too tired to carry on. But I've been playing it pretty much every day this week and I've been enjoying it. It's a little management sim on a boat, if you don't know what it is, and you're helping spirits get from where they start to crossing over into the afterlife. But they all want to hang around.
Just like Kena.
Yeah. Mm. And they want you to like build them houses and stuff. And then once you've built their houses, you can't then unbuild their house, even when they've crossed over to the other side. So I've just got a bunch of these empty houses that I can't get rid of.
Sad.
So I have to keep buying a bigger boat. We're going to need a bigger boat to put more houses on for people who want to live on my boat. So,
damn.
Yeah. But I'm enjoying it nonetheless. Even when the people will say, I'm so hungry, and then turn around and give me a bunch of cooked food and be like, here, share this around, but I'm so hungry. And I'm like, okay, well, why did you give me this food then? Eat it yourself. But yeah, I'm enjoying that game. That's what I played this
Good. Week. Is it, what's that on?
PlayStation 5.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I installed like a bunch of games a little while ago when I was kind of like, I don't know what to play. Mm. So I've got like maybe for like 4 or 5 games that I've kind of dipped into that I haven't finished. I still haven't finished Dishonored 2. I haven't finished Talos Principle. I'm probably not going to finish Spiritfarer. And also I finished a book this week, but I've not picked up the third one. So
still?
Was it the sequel to the...
I finished the sequel and then now I'm over it.
Right.
I don't want to read books anymore.
You don't want to...
Well, the issue is that I haven't bought the third one. And then because I haven't immediately bought the third one and jumped into it, I'm now not
interested
anymore. It's too late. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you're going to forget everything.
Well, it's from while it lasted.
Yeah.
That's very impressive. You read 2 books this year.
Thank you. I did read 2
books. That's
more than I anticipated. Yeah. So.
Sick. That's cool as hell.
Thank you.
I went to Wales and I took my PlayStation and I was there with some friends and we were playing some games together. So I've got a selection of things that were played with friends and on my own. And most of it was Jackbox. Played a lot of different Jackbox packs just for like 4 hours in a row, just loads and loads of Jackbox. Some of those games are rubbish, especially in the latest pack. Some of those latest pack, like nine. There's a few in there that are just like, God, they're boring. They're just not. They're just not fun at all. They're not funny or interesting.
I find that about most packs, though. There's always like at least one that's like just crap.
Yeah.
There's like one, I can't remember what pack it's on, where it's like a little, you play as a little dude and you're like zipping around the screen and it's not like a, it's like an actual game. Right. And you're like trying to, I don't know, throw balls around or something. I can't remember what it is, but there's one that's just not, it's just not good.
We played one. It's the one where you have to do the order of things, like on a timeline. So you'll be given, you split off into teams, you'll be given different prompts, or it'll be order of release of these songs, for example, and you have to drop it down on that. You don't know what's coming next.
I don't mind that one.
That one's not too bad. However, even though I had the option on to filter US-centric content, there was one that we did that was from most calorific to least calorific, and it was just American foods.
Good.
Right.
And we didn't know what half of them were. It's and the other half we only knew about because of, you know, television and stuff.
Yeah.
It's called Quick Quizort.
Quizort.
Yeah, with an X.
Quicksort.
Mm. Quicksort.
Yeah, there we are. That makes sense. So that was fine. Played a little bit of Loco Roco, still just jumping to the end of the stage, rolling, breaking up into bits,
being squishy,
having bits of me stolen, you know, that kind of thing. Did a playthrough of Little Hope, the Dark Pictures anthology, Little Hope, because one of the people that we were there with had not played it before. And that was fun. We actually managed to keep everybody alive until the very end, where the game just decided, oh, well, unfortunately, because you played this character as a rude, horrible person, this was Angela, you know, who's rude and horrible anyway.
Yeah.
And because you decided to play her the way that she is, we're just going to kill her. So it wasn't about failing a quick time event. It was right at the end of the game. Oh, unfortunately, you're still horrible. So you're just going to die now.
Oh.
And that felt like a complete
ripoff. Was it
like
people just didn't save her?
Yeah, someone just not choose.
No. Like we were all helping each other out and we were succeeding at every single quick time.
No, as in like, did the game say like, oh, because they don't like you, they're not going to help you?
It wasn't that. It was that she hadn't, the rest of them, I got a trophy for saving them, or like they escaped their past or something. I think because she maintained her nastiness, because we did choose to save her several times, like physically, like go back and help her.
Yeah.
But because she didn't have a change of heart, as it were.
Right.
She basically succumbed to the same demons that she always had, or some wonky excuse like that. And then we just had to watch as she just got killed suddenly for no reason.
Okay.
It was like, great. Well,
good
to know that it's not just about playing well. It's about choosing dialogue, the right dialogue options as well.
So that's what Dr. Reynolds Hill would say.
It's not just
about playing well.
It's about being a nice boy.
It was good to see him again and his amazing intro music, which I love. And I'm very sad that we're not getting a Dark Pictures anthology game this year.
Mm.
It's very sad indeed. I played some more Final Fantasy 16 and I did a big epic fight and that was super fun. And I hopefully getting back on track now to just like play that more regularly and finish that off. But I am still enjoying it. And I played flipping loads of Diablo 4 because I have been exhausted and that is a good game for that. And that's everything that I've played. Amazing. Mm.
Now it's time, I think, that we head over to the coziest corner of all. It's review corner time.
Oh.
Here we are in review corner. It's me and James Jenkins.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm here again. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good.
What are you going to tell me about today?
Oh, been playing that game. What everyone's talking about, Baldur's Gate 3.
The bear one.
The one with the bear. Yes, you can romance a bear. Wine and Dine and Ursine, which I was very pleased with. tweeting the other day. But yeah, so Baldur's Gate 3. First of all, I should remember this time to say, like, thank you very much to Larian Studios for providing us code. And yeah. Oh boy, this game is good. It's very...
Is it?
Very good.
Enjoying it.
Yeah.
So for those who don't... Because some there might be some people listening who don't know what a Baldur's Gate is as a game.
Yeah.
Give us an overview of the genre and the gameplay first.
Of course. So yeah, so this is an RPG. This is a real beefy CRPG. That sort of, I believe the C stands for like computer, weirdly. It's a very outdated term, but anyway, it's
that
sort of, yeah, it's like just your sort of like overhead viewpoint of RPG sort of flavor. It's set in a D&D world with all the D&D rules. It's kind of a long awaited follow up that people didn't really expect until it was announced a few years ago. To the original games that are, you know, the first Baldur's Gate from 1998, sequel follow-up in 2000. But this obviously not from BioWare. It's from Larian Studios, who did Divinity Original Sin 1 and 2, which were, again, that sort of CRPG style, so like the overhead, a lot of like RPG sort of choices and whatnot, but also turn-based combat and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. This game... A lot of people who are familiar will probably have already played it in early access because it's been out since 2020 and they've been slowly sort of building stuff up from there. And then, you know, a lot of this hype, typically you'd see sort of early access games, you know, maybe not do so well on their, you know, version one proper release.
Yeah.
This one amazingly has just, you know, blown all expectations out of the water and... rightfully so, I think. It's genuinely, it feels like such a good RPG. Like, it's one of the best RPGs that I have experienced. It's insane. Yeah. So a lot of fun there. A lot of D&D thing. And yeah, with my... I mean, I have quite limited knowledge of D&D. I don't know, yeah, if you've had much experience with
D&D. I happen to be aware of the actual world, because it's in Forgotten Realms, isn't it? Which is a specific branch of D&D. Yeah. I only know that because I played the Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance spin-off games.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Which
are,
similarly, they're like somewhere between kind of top-down and third-person. They almost feel like third-person because they're quite zoomed in, or they can be, but... yeah, it's the top-down hack and slash kind of stuff.
More sort of action-y.
Yeah, it was more action-focused compared to the other RPGs.
Ah, very cool.
But yeah, that's all I really know about the D&D world.
Well, same. I'm a D&D noob, essentially. You know, done a couple of sort of campaigns, a couple of, you know, one-off things, sessions. But from my limited knowledge, it does feel like one of the most sort of faithful recreations of like a D&D... just the D&D vibes, like the freedom that that provides. One of the best sort of representations of that in a video game that I've seen. Mm-hmm. Just because, like, the choices available to you are... It's absurd, and it's very... it seems to be very faithfully recreated as well. It's phenomenal. So, like, the... story and world building, very in depth. There's a lot of combat mechanics that are sort of translated well, and, you know, maybe tweaked slightly to make it a bit more video gamey, but seem like they're in there. You know, you move, you take an action, you take a bonus action, and then you've got all plethora of different options. I think the most important thing is, like, it just feels like it rewards like that sort of attitude of problem solving, and you can go about things in so many different ways, and it keeps not only throwing surprises at you in terms of, like, your story and things that you can find, but also what you think you can get away with, and then you find out, oh my god, you can actually do that.
I saw a bit of footage of it, and
it's crazy.
It reminded me a little bit of like those really early text-based adventures, where you weirdly in those games, even though they were quite rudimentary and, like, you know, we're talking like late 80s, sometimes you could type in like "eat the goblin" and it would just let you do it, and it's like, oh, okay, that's allowed. And that's the kind of vibe I was getting from this. Like, some of the choices people have seen, like,
it's crazy.
Is it's really clever that they've done all that.
It's phenomenal how they've managed to sort of cater to that, and, you know, just feel like, I think a lot of that is they've benefited from early access, and they've realized, oh, people want to try this, okay, then here you go. But yeah, I'll sort of go into the nitty-gritty. I've written down quite a lot of notes here, but so, like, classes, you know, when you start off, obviously big important thing for a big RPG. Got to get your character right. There are 12 main classes. I think they sort of fit into like your standard 5th edition rulebook. Right, this is all 5th edition for the D&D nerds out there. You get 46 subclasses tied to those main classes. Wow. And then you have the option to multi-class. You pick another main class, and I think you can just do that, you know, as many times as you want in place of leveling up your current one. So although your level limit is 12 and you don't level up super often through the game, you have an insane amount of possibilities and combinations that you could do with that, which is crazy. You've also got like 11 races with further customization. Yeah, you got like, yeah, humans, elves, half elves, dwarves, you know, halflings, all that sort of stuff. And then you're more D&D specific, like, you know, drow and tiefling. I didn't know what a Githyanki was, but I do now.
I only know that from another video game, actually.
There we go.
Demon Stone, not Demon Souls.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a Patrick Stewart game.
Oh my god,
well,
what?
A Patrick Stewart, I mean, Patrick Stewart is in it. It's not a Patrick Stewart game,
but made by famed game creator.
Also set in the Forgotten Realms, and it has Githyanki in it.
But, oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, that might be a Forgotten Realms specific thing then. That's interesting. Yeah. The choices are insane anyway. So it's like for people that are very big on like a lot of choice in our RPGs, this is huge. A little bit on the character creator. It seems like pretty well done. Like, it could, this is a very, very, maybe the only criticism I have so far of the game, it could be slightly better with, like, you know, changing actual facial details and stuff specifically. Yeah. You pick from like just a selection of pre-done heads, but then you can add like, you know, different eye colors, tattoos, scars, yada, 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 a lot of different hair choices and all that sort of stuff. So it's pretty good still in that respect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in terms of like, once you get cracking into it, like, story, you awaken as a captive on like a mind flayer ship, so the start is very sort of cinematic, and that's another thing that impressed me with, like, you know, this typical sort of game, you expect to be reading through lots of text and the story to be presented in that sort of way. This is very cinematic when it wants to be, and very very flashy and graphically very beautiful as well. So you awaken on a mind flayer ship. You've got a nasty little mind tadpole shoved into your eye. This is, you know, spoilers, but it's literally the very first thing that happens.
Okay.
And basically you've got to, you know, you escape and you've got to figure out what to do with this problem, because it is a problem.
Right.
So you'll find, you know, a lot of other stories, your typical sort of RPG thing, but it's not really like, again, it keeps throwing up surprises, and nothing ever feels like it's a filler story. Everything feels like well written, well presented, and even like, yeah, there's no sort of find 10 of this sort of fetch quest.
Yeah, right.
There's always an interesting sort of story in there. So, but yeah, again, like the writing or sort of the voice acting really, really like impressed me as well.
Yeah.
So it feels like there's so many sort of old school elements to this in terms of like the format of the game, but they've made it so modernized with incredible voice acting, incredible like presentation. Just phenomenal. Combat. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Just about to say, good stuff. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about combat?
I'm going to have to sort of blast through some of these details here, because it's a big game, there's a lot involved here. But I feel like, I should say really like the choices, again, I've made that kind of clear, like it makes it feel like a proper RPG. You can do a lot of things that, you know, you wouldn't have expected in other games anyway. But the other thing of making it sort of faithful to D&D, you can actually see the dice rolls, which is really cool.
Right, okay. Nice.
So, they present that in quite a clear way. They don't sort of shy away from it, hide it behind some other things. They make it very clear, like, hey, this is what you're doing, and you've got, like, these bonuses here, your skill bonuses, any optional extras you can put in. Very clearly shown. And, you know, for any non-D&D people as well, it sort of streamlines, I think, using like inspiration points. There's a system where you can re-roll if you have a sort of inspiration points, and you get those points by doing things that are like, choices that sort of fit into your character's backstories and stuff, and the same goes for your party members as well. And then sort of going into combat then, as I was going to say, again, it's all very in-depth. Mm. It's quite a bit more complicated than what I was sort of expecting, even from, like, I've played original Sin 1 and 2, but this is trying to fit in the D&D sort of system into that.
Right.
But again, like, for UI, it's a lot of first, but a lot of the tooltips and everything there, I feel like, at least, maybe it's just me, I'm sort of like used to going through these sort of games, but the tooltips feel like they're clear enough. They provide enough information, but they're still like not being too cluttered, basically. Right. So everything is there to sort of explain to you once you sort of go through everything.
Yeah.
Like I say, the sheer number of like skills and magic spells, it's crazy. You've got a lot of different things you can stealth through the game. The combat is turn-based, but regular exploration, you can sort of walk around freely.
Right, yeah.
You can switch on a turn-based sort of mode whilst you're in just a sort of overworld, which can help with stealth as well. But yeah, again, it's all tied into this idea of like just improvise. Mm. Find the best approach. You can take enemies by surprise, and like things like even basic things. So you've got your spells, you've got your class specific skills and whatnot, but you've got basic things that you wouldn't consider in a lot of games, like pushing someone off a ledge, for example, or towards another enemy, in order to get like an AoE, or pushing them into an environmental hazard, jumping higher during combat to get like high advantage. You can pick things up and throw them at enemies, and I'm a big fan of that. There's even like bonus feats to add damage to that. They've thought of everything, basically.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like I've talked a lot about this. I just want to sort of, without spoiling too much, mention some of the weird stuff, because it does seem to like get that vibe of, you know, like a D&D session where people will suggest silly stuff.
Yeah.
And they've lent into that as well.
Right.
You have a skill called like speaking to animals, or animal speech, or whatever it is. You can speak to animals.
Right.
I got into a fight with a squirrel at one point. You might well have seen the clip on Twitter. It didn't end well for the squirrel. If you pick a certain option, you can literally just boot it into a cliffside.
Yeah.
I've found treasure in hay bales after speaking to goats that are like, oh, they're constantly hiding treasure in my food.
Right.
Weird stuff like even stacking up boxes to a higher place. You're thinking, I'm just going to get a bit of treasure. That led to a whole new area.
Right.
Quite sizable. I've spoken to like an ogre to become my friend.
Nice.
And fight with us. It's all very silly stuff that they've thrown in, but matched quite well with like the more serious storytelling elements as well. I don't want to go on too long, but again, like, I just want to say, you know, the party members as well, all the intriguing backstories is very good. There is a lot here if you like RPGs. And you know, like, maybe that sort of old school stuff, even if you're not familiar with D&D, absolutely worth checking this out. Any other like thoughts or questions?
Well,
so
no,
I've rambled on.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. You know, how silly does it get? And I was gonna ask about the combat as well. But yeah, that's that all sounds good. Definitely intriguing. For I guess like what I've seen people playing this game saying, I've not played any Baldur's Gate before, and I've not played any D&D before, and I'm really enjoying it. So it sounds like you're kind of agreeing with that, and it sounds like it's worth checking out.
Yeah,
For almost everyone, really.
Nice. It's definitely worth it. If you're not big into RPGs at all and don't like all the numbers, then it'll probably be quite scary.
Sure,
but it is well worth doing. Even on like you can pick just story difficulty mode, which is simplifies combat and whatnot. It is also multiplayer. So I'm not sure if it's split screen compatible for PC. That's a different manner. But, you know, PS5 should be coming like early September. Xbox is happening eventually. Yeah. They're still trying to figure that out and to be determined. But yeah, definitely worth checking out. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you, James.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
And we'll catch you in the next time you're doing a review corner. But for now, let's go back to the podcast.
Honestly, I'm just going to be playing this for the next year.
Well, yeah. No more review corners for James.
No, I'm done. Year. See you later. Bye.
Thanks, Peter and James.
Thanks, Peter and James.
Thanks, Peter and James.
Thanks, Peter and James.
For that review corner. So now time for question two, which comes from Dan Scott. Hello, Bashta Pathtin. Yep. The Witcher Season 3 has been and gone, and the general consensus for Henry Cavill's final foray as Geralt seems to be that it ended with a whimper, and things don't look too bright for the series, with superfan Cavill being replaced by Liam Hemsworth for Season 4. One of the many rumours for Cavill's departure is a showrunner's alleged disregard and contempt for the source material, which fans of The Witcher also believe to be the biggest reason for the lack of quality following a promising Season 1. The question is, my question is this, should future TV and film adaptations stick more stringently to the source material in order to heighten the chances of creating a quality product that the fans love, as seen with The Last of Us TV series, which, with a few exceptions, is a beat-for-beat retelling of the story? Is it important for the cast or crew to have some kind of affinity with the IP with which they're involved, as Cavill did, or is there scope for future series to successfully divert away from the source material and put their own spin on things? Love you all. Kiss, kiss.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Have you watched anyone watch The Witcher TV show?
No. I watched the first two. I didn't like the first series. I enjoyed the second series a bit more because it made a bit more sense chronologically in terms of how it was structured. And then I've just, to be honest, I've not been signed up to Netflix because I was piggybacking off someone else's account.
Me too.
And then there was a big purge.
Yeah.
So I haven't even had the opportunity, but I have absolutely no interest in watching it. I'm just not fussed.
No. Right. I'm not a fancy gal, so I just wasn't really interested in it anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've just not watched it because I'm not particularly into well, it's not that I'm not a fantasy gal, because I kind of am, but I don't know, I just wasn't that interested in that. I think I've seen the trailers and stuff for the various seasons, and it's come across, and this might not be true, but it's come across to me as though it's as much about like the people and the relationships and maybe even the politics as it is about actually doing some monster hunting. Like it comes across to me as though it's only like 33% monsters, and if it was 80% monsters, I'd be really down for that, and
I would
watch it.
Not nearly enough witchery.
Yeah, exactly. But either way, I think I might be, I don't know if I'm in the minority here, but I think that a video game adaptation doesn't necessarily need to follow the original story to be good. It could have even new characters in it and just be set in that universe, or it could have the characters that you know and love, but it could, you know, kind of subvert what you think is going to happen. I remember before The Last of Us came out, a lot of people were saying, will this actually, we know that it's Joel and Ellie, but will this actually be the story that we know? Or are they going to like do something crazy and completely, you know, pull the rug from under us?
Mm.
And I think all of those things can be good as following the story directly. It all just comes down to how the show is actually produced. So I don't think necessarily that specific aspect dictates the success of, or should dictate the quality of a show. But as I say, I might be in the minority, and maybe the stats just say that if you actually follow the video game story, you're going to do better. I think what does help, though, probably, is if sort of the showrunners, like maybe the writer and the director, do have perhaps some kind of affinity for the IP. In the case of The Witcher, I mean, some people seem to forget that the video games are based on a book series, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, technically, if you want to get actually about this,
literary about this,
you know, you could just argue to say, well, it should follow the books rather than the games. I don't know how close the games and the books are to each other, but the TV series has a lot of source material it could borrow from, so I don't know. But yeah, I think as long as the showrunners at least understand what the sort of the aesthetic and the themes are of a video game IP, then it doesn't necessarily matter if the story follows the game itself.
I think it's the same with every kind of adaptation, in the sense like book to TV show or book to movie, you know, game to movie, the same way. I think that there is an element of it where you have to please fans of the original source material, And then there's also the element of you have to be able to introduce an entire new selection of people to this story. And I think that things like the Hunger Games, like movies, people love them, but fans of the book will always say, oh, I wish that they'd done this better. I wish that this had been included. They didn't include this. Same things with like Harry Potter and stuff. When I watched Harry Potter with my boyfriend, he'd stop the movie every couple of minutes to tell me that in the books this happened, but it doesn't happen to him this bit.
When you go change your trousers, yeah. Yeah.
Piss boy.
Poor Ben.
Poor Ben. He's all right.
He's all right.
He's all right. But also with like the video game adaptations, like The Last of Us, it did such a good job of being able to introduce brand new people to the kind of world of The Last of Us. And it did change things. And I think the things that it did change worked really well for a TV show, where maybe they wouldn't have worked as well in a video game. And I think that that's where you have to kind of also have the distinction of, well, it works in a video game, but would this work in a TV show or a movie? And normally the answer is no. You can't have a big, long shooting segment or stealth bit that's going to take 45 minutes to get past because it's just going to be boring. So there should be space for creative freedom with these source materials and how much you want to do. Like, I'm intrigued with The Last of Us series season 2 will take the story from the second game or not. Then they've already said that there will be some deviations from the second game, which is great. I'm excited to see what they change about it, because
I think they could keep Joel alive.
You think they will?
I think they could.
I think
they could severely hurt him so that he is.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have the same.
No, it wouldn't.
Because why would she go all feral?
I don't know. I feel like there's.
If Joel's just got like a broken leg or something.
You think he's worth too much to the show?
I think Pedro Pascal is, even though he would still be there in flat. We're going off on a tangent here. Even though Pedro Pascal is, it would still be involved in the show through the flashbacks that are in the game. He's too valuable. And also, Naughty Dog and by extension HBO then have to relive the backlash to the game all over.
Yeah, but with an entire new bunch of people.
Exactly, who are just going to flip the table and get furious. Yeah.
But then if they change it, there's probably going to be a different set of backlash.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of
They can't win.
No.
They can't win.
But there should be creative freedom, but there should also, like Peter say, be someone working on the show that has like some kind of loyalty to the original source material, or who can, like Henry Cavill used to do, correct people if they are actively doing something wrong, if they're like making up something in law, or if you know something like, well, in like 40 years ago, there was a war. And you're actually saying that it was 200 years ago, but that doesn't make sense because of this, this, and this that you've already established. That's just the job of the writers and like the producers to know this information. So as long as someone involved does have some loyalty to the IP, I think that there should be allowed for creative freedom. And like you say, The Witch is an outstanding situation because it's based on the book, not the TV show, the game, sorry. So yeah, I mean, I've not watched it and I just haven't really heard anyone talk about it that much, apart from the fact that Henry Cavill was leaving. That's kind of the only thing I've heard about it. So
it's doomed. The TV show is doomed for sure. I think I could see scope for both scenarios laid out by Dan here, whether there's more control given to people who had a hand in the original IP, or if there's less, in fact, you know, they're no one and they can just fly by the seat of their pants and do whatever they want. Because in the case of The Last of Us, at least, they had Neil Druckmann involved, who by all accounts is not an impossible man to work with. However, if you brought in, say, the writer of the Witcher books, who I understand is extremely litigious and just a bit cantankerous, there would be headbuttings all the time. There would be creative differences all over the place, and it might be a bit of a complete nightmare production. You know, it may just never come out. So there has to be give and take, and there's probably a balance to be struck. Personally, I think that there should be someone involved in the original IP present to advise, and I imagine that's the case most of the time. But you've got directors, you've got writers, you've got studios, you've got budgets. There are so many ways that things can change and twist, and you know, people drop out of projects and so on and so forth. The actors get involved and then they don't want to be involved anymore. I think it's, while there's definitely examples of it being done wrong, I think more often than not, sometimes it just doesn't work, and you can't deciding how involved the original creator is in something doesn't necessarily decide how good it's going to turn out. And as is the case with The Witcher, it's easy now that we've had a few seasons to look at it and go, well, you know, maybe this went wrong, or this could have happened, or Henry Cavill's not feeling like it's living up to the potential that he sees for it because he's a super fan. We don't know what it's like to be in there and be involved, and or what could have changed that from the very beginning, because TV and film production is so very different from game development specifically that sometimes it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Do we know if the Halo TV show follows the game at all? And also Twisted Metal TV show.
It doesn't follow the game. I'm trying to find it out.
Because he takes his helmet off, doesn't he? And that was a big thing.
Yeah.
Like Master Chief would never do that.
No, I know that it doesn't follow the game at all. It's like a totally different story. Mm. I don't even know if it's meant to be sort of canonical, but just set like before the game or alongside the game.
I don't think it is.
Like a whole just non-canon thing. Mm. But yeah, I guess it's not. But I'm just trying to find out if anyone from 343 or Microsoft actually had an input in that, or if they just gave them the IP and said, do it.
Same with the Twisted Metal TV show. I mean, what other TV shows? There's The Witcher, The Last of Us, Halo.
Gran Turismo.
That's the movie,
Uncharted.
Uncharted, so good. Best movie ever.
Love that. I'm literally in a Papa John's.
Thought about watching that last night.
Yeah, I really want to rewatch it as well. Maybe we should do a watch party at some
point. Well, we tried to. We all got too drunk halfway through and got bored.
We ordered Papa John's and everything, and then, yeah, we gave up. But yeah, we should do that. We should give that a go.
But yeah, with the Halo series, I think that's a good case in point where it's not fair for me to say, really, because I've not watched it. But the reason I didn't watch it is because it didn't look very good in the trailer. And I think if you directly adapted the game, it wouldn't have worked. As you say, Ashton, you can't just have shooting nonstop for like 6 episodes or 12 episodes. That you have to like add in, you know, other things. I don't even know what
a gay love story,
yes, for example.
Finally.
So that it wouldn't have worked directly, but you could have at least set it amongst that story and, you know, introduced other characters as well, like have some Marines in there or whatever. And that could have worked. But equally, it could have worked to have a completely different story as they did. But ultimately, either one of those options only work if you then have like a good writer, good showrunners, a studio who are making the right decisions as well, like the, you know, the people at the top, and preferably someone involved from the actual game who says this is how Halo should be. Mm-hmm. And from the looks of the trailer, it didn't appear that all of those boxes were ticked. I don't know though; it's not fair for me to say exactly.
We've still come a long way though, because as unappealing as the Halo show is to a lot of fans, it's still probably quite watchable.
I think my dad really liked it.
You said your dad's
quite apparently very. It's quite graphic. It's quite like gory and really violent.
Nice. Mm. I think it's on Paramount Plus. I think is where it is. Yeah, which is. Yeah. I mean, who's bloody subscribed
to that?
Same
with Twisted Metal's on Peacock. How do we get that?
Not getting that. But yeah. So when you compare it to where we were with like the Uwe Boll directed horror pieces of the early 2000s with I can't even think of them. Blood Rain was one of them. Mm. Did he do a Silent Hill?
He did the Resident Evil movies.
He didn't do that, but was that not, you know, still people quite enjoy those as schlocky as those are. But we've still come a long way, and it's only going to going to get better. I remember reading in the Console Wars book that I read over like this summer and last summer, there was an extended bit about the Super Mario Bros. Movie from the late 80s. Mm-hmm. Was it late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah,
late 80s, I think.
That sort of time. And how basically, it catalogued the whole saga with that, but it sounded like Nintendo were essentially just shown a screening of it. And they were like, oh God. And that was it.
Yeah.
And so I find it very hard to believe that someone representing the IP holder is not going to be involved in some capacity with most things happening these days. Mm-hmm. But it is all about how much say they have.
Yeah.
And how far that say goes.
Yeah.
The Witcher didn't really work out, but it is about the book.
I think we'll find out when the Borderlands movie comes out much input that Randy Pitchford had in that.
So
and
excited.
I hope and pray it so much.
That was a magic trick.
They wrapped last June, I think, and it comes out next year.
Next August.
Yeah, there's something really wrong with that film.
They've had to reshoot so much.
I cannot
they reshot
wait.
It,
it's
they changed director. They've probably rewritten a bunch
I
of
think
it.
The writer had his name removed from the production.
No, I think the original director did.
Okay. I can't wait because
it's going to be brilliant.
Awful. And I'm really excited to see it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's your answer. I hope that helps, Dan. It's time to move on to something a little bit strange.
That's true.
A bit peculiar.
A bit new. It's weird news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. Remember, if you'd like to submit your weird video game news to us, you can do so on Facebook and Twitter with the relevant post that goes up on a Tuesday. However, if you'd like to guarantee a shout out at this point in the podcast, you need to go to that patreon.com/teamtriplejump, the place that we're promoting the hell out of. You should go there.
Great and, news.
Yes?
There's a new person on there whose name we're not going to be able to pronounce.
Yes, you're right. And become a podcast producer and you'll get a shout out right here and you'll support us and we'll love you forever.
Yeah.
Just like
G.Y. Goliath,
Nicole Hansen,
Duncan Wilson,
Katie Garrett or Jared,
Eric Siu.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a good swing.
Question mark.
Melody L. Bonnet.
Yes. At Nexus Polaris,
Gabrielle Philippink
and Blake Thomas. I wanted that one.
Thank you, podcast producers. And thank you, Eric. Welcome, Eric,
yeah. To the podcast.
I think Eric was here last week.
Oh.
But I do think that maybe I spelled his name wrong.
What?
I think I put Eric Slew last week instead of Siu. And then when I went to do it this week, I was like, oh. That's the wrong letter.
Eric, sorry.
Yeah.
That's just if you want to have us mispronounce your name,
yeah.
Then you need to sign up to be a podcast
producer.
There's
no better this week. Like last week you spelled it wrong and we said it wrong. This week you spelled it right and we probably said it wrong anyway. So
Eric, if you're in the comments or do you want to put it on your Patreon, let us know how to say your name correctly.
Siu.
I'd guess Siu. Eric Siu.
Yeah.
Siu.
Yeah. How about next week we mispronounce everybody's name?
Except Eric's.
Well, we still don't know how to say Eric's, but potentially. Peter, have you got some weird news?
I've got some weird news here that was sent by Blake Thomas and Michael Milan, both on Facebook, I believe.
Blake Thomas is a podcast producer.
Mm. Yes. And this is a write-up from GameSpot.com. Or G-Spot, as I like to call it.
Yeah, that is what it is.
Written by Stephen T. Wright. The headline.
What did Stephen T. What did Stephen T.
Wright?
W-R-I-G-H-T. Oh, okay. Mm. What did Stephen Wright?
Stephen Wright wrote, Barack Obama is a Captain Falcon main, apparently.
Excellent.
Subtitle. According to a recent Q&A with Super Smash Bros. N64 organizer, former President Barack... I thought that said... According to a recent Q&A with Super Smash Bros. N64 organizer, former President Barack Obama... former President Barack Obama mains Captain Falcon in the original Smash. Mm. I mean, that's most of the article just in the subheading, but let's read it anyway.
What's he up to these days?
Yeah.
Playing Smash.
The original Super Smash Bros. For N64 might not be as famed as its sequel, Melee, but it has a hardcore fan base all the same. One of those fans, Cody Daniels, got the chance to play a bit of Smash 64 with President Barack Obama as part of a Make-A-Wish in 2015. And he says the former Commander-in-Chief mains Captain Falcon. And what's more, he's not too shabby at the game either. Huh? Speaking to Smash community figure Tafo as part of a recent stream, Daniel said that he got to play Smash 64 with Obama at the White House. As part of the experience, he got a signed copy of the game, as well as a special card protector coin. Do you think it's a signed copy of the game signed by Barack Obama?
Not yeah,
the
creator I assume of so, Smash
Bros. Yeah, not signed by anyone from Nintendo, but this is my copy of Smash Bros. Signed by Barack Obama.
That'd be amazing.
Unique.
It's kind of a random make-a-wish, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like want to sometimes play Smash Bros. With
Barack
president.
Obama. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, I'd like to meet John Cena or something. But
and he'll do it.
And he'll be
he'll
there.
Meet, he'll meet anyone.
Yeah, he will.
He loves it.
He's a great guy.
Are you sure about that? Yes. Daniels further said that Obama was significantly better at the game than he expected, especially compared to average casual players. Daniels is now an organizer in the Smash 64 scene, having hosted one of the largest house tournaments ever for the game. Besides Smash, he's perhaps best known as a poker player, recently winning $11,000 as part of a reality poker show, apparently. Don't need to know any of this.
Obama?
No, Daniels.
That's what he does at this time.
Obama doesn't need it.
This is actually the end of the article. It just talks about Daniels a bit more. He donated all of his winnings to the Make-A-Wish Foundation in order to pay it forward and help someone else have an experience he did in 2015. For more on Daniel's work in the Smash 64 scene, check out the 64 Stories documentary on Operation Desert Smash.
was not sure where that sentence was going.
It really was just
an advert.
It really was just the one sentence bit of news. Someone played Smash Bros. With Obama and he prefers Captain Falcon.
Brilliant.
And is quite good.
Still a good headline though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Ashton.
I have a news. It was submitted by Josh Lees on Facebook and at SnowballYanny04 and at Carl_B_ERVB on Twitter as well.
Nice.
From Kotaku by Isaiah Colbert, depending on where you're from.
Who knows?
Baldur's Gate 3 voice actor says his job was to make sex sounds. The Baldur's Gate 3, the gift that keeps on giving. Mm. Then the subtitle, I don't really understand how to read, so I'm just going to read it as is. Larian Studios hit Alex Jordan's line to record himself kissing his hand while he made a bunch of breathy sex noises.
Hit Alex Jordan's?
Yeah, how else do you read that? That's very confusing, isn't it?
Unless it's like to hit the line, but that's what?
Alex Jordan's line record himself.
That doesn't make sense.
It just
doesn't
work, does it?
No.
Not really, unless it's like hit my music or hit that line.
It's like if it was like Larian Studios' hit had Alex Jordan record himself kissing his hand while he bunched. But that's not what they've written.
Yeah.
There's in bold underneath it says, "Thank you for your service," with a salute emoji.
Okay.
Everyone's talking about Baldur's Gate 3's sexy times, be it with a giant red demon lady, a smarmy vampire, or a bear. What you might not have known about the fantasy role-playing game is that Larian Studios hired at least one voice actor to exclusively make sex sounds.
Good.
Voice actor Alex Jordan, who lent his voice to cartoons and video games like Atomic Heart, Lord of the Rings Gollum, and Demon's Souls.
He did the sex noises in Gollum.
Oh, I love those.
Revealed on his official TikTok page that his voice can be heard in Baldur's Gate 3 as well. Unlike his previous roles as cannon fodder villains and super sleuth detectives, Jordan's role in Baldur's Gate 3 was specifically to provide the party-based RPG with a plethora of breathy sex sounds. At a studio that I've worked with a lot, they come to me and they say, "Do you want to voice act in Baldur's Gate 3? I said, "Of course I want to voice act in Baldur's Gate 3. Who doesn't want to voice act in Baldur's Gate 3? But it's a little bit close to release, isn't it? What's the role?" Jordan said. They said, "No, not a role. We've finished recording all of that stuff, I'm afraid. No, what we need is sexy sounds. Do you want to come in and do the sexy sounds?" ? When asked if he wants to come in and do the sexy sounds, Jordan recalled saying, "Sure.
Yes, I would like to come in and do the sexy sounds."
What awaited Jordan was a very awkward recording session where he had to perform various oohs and ahs while kissing his hand a whole lot in the booth.
God.
Apparently, Jordan's vocal efforts were greatly appreciated because developer Larian Studios replied under his TikTok saying, "And what sounds they are." Towards the end of his TikTok, Jordan asked the players to keep him in mind while they are gallivanting in Baldur's Gate 3 and attempting to riz up in its many romanceable...
Riz up?
Riz means?
I know what riz means.
What does riz mean?
Riz means like if you're like really smooth and like if you're really good at getting the opposite sex because you're so good at like smooth talk and chatting them up. That means you've got Riz.
Mm. You've got Riz.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many more things can it possibly be called?
You can Riz up.
You can
up
say
somewhere.
That someone's Riz is like, you know, off the chain.
So
the chart.
It's similar to big dick energy.
Mm.
It's different. It's yeah. subtler than that. I think. Yeah. It's like
because
just,
anyone
it's
can have Riz.
Like,
it's just being it's being it's charismatic.
Kind of je ne sais quoi.
Yeah. Riz. Yeah, and you
it
can Riz
like
someone
a word
up.
From the
40s. Yeah, it does.
It's not very Gen Z.
Sounds like a magazine yeah. that you shouldn't be reading.
No.
Yeah. And then he said, you think about that, Jordan said. You mull that over as you run around, you horny little perverts with your little perverted role plays.
Whoa.
You mull that over as you run around, you little horny perverts with your little perverted role plays, you randy bastards. You think of me, is what Jordan said in his TikTok. Okay. Wow. So yeah, he was brought in to specifically make wet kissy sounds.
Wet noises. Well, good for
it's
him.
Just they should just get some ASMR girls in to record the female parts because
yes,
they're
yes,
so
yes.
good at that.
Yes.
Yeah, they're like, once you listen to the mouth sounds,
oh,
disgusting.
It is awful.
POV, you get kissed by your girlfriend. On the ear.
On the ear.
Now that's Riz.
Yeah.
It is. Is right on the eardrum.
Yeah.
Close enough, right? Jonathan Wong has my weird news, which comes from Kotaku and Zach Svizen. Fallout Deathclaw creator impressed, horrified by all the porn. The Deathclaw is one of the most feared monsters in the Fallout video games. They are able to rip apart low-level or unprepared players in seconds with their long claws and powerful limbs. But did you know that a subset of Fallout players find the Deathclaws hot?
Yes.
Sexy yeah. even?
I did.
It's
not surprising,
true.
Even a little bit.
And they've got Riz and one... Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the creators behind the creatures shared their thoughts on all the Deathclaw porn floating around the seedier corners of the web. Released in 2008, we're going to learn about Fallout now. We're going to learn about Deathclaws. Cool. Yep. Bethesda artists Jonah Loeb and the late Adam Adamowicz, great name, worked together to create the new Deathclaws that would go on to scare players in Fallout New Vegas, Fallout 4, and Fallout 76. Well, they scared most players. Some had a very... What? Hang on. Feels like they should say while.
Mm.
Well, they scared most players. Some had a very different reaction to the monsters.
Kotaku,
on August
get
it the 6th,
together.
An Instagram account dedicated to Fallout memes and jokes shared an image that made fun of all the Deathclaw porn that exists. The image was a screenshot of Bethesda asking for Deathclaw fan art and then comically reacting to the nasty images it received. And in the comments of this post, Loeb shared his thoughts on all the Deathclaw porn that is out there. And yes, there is a lot. Just know if you go looking for it, all of it is NSFW.
I'm going to find some while you talk.
I was once trying to do a thumbnail for a What Culture video and I just typed in Deathclaw to Google images and it was like the sixth result was just Deathclaw ass.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
People love lizards, don't they? As the creator of the Deathclaw, I've been silently impressed / horrified at the sheer tonnage of Deathclaw porn out there, commented Loeb. He later retweeted a response from a cursed Fallout image account that the artist follows. The account, Draco Deathclaw, is a big fan of the creatures and shared the initial image, so they felt responsible for getting Loeb involved. The former Bethesda artist confirmed that this account had absolutely something to do with the response. The Deathclaw's creator explains why people find it sexy is the subset of the next the subheading.
Okay.
The next area. Do you want to find out?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I'm still trying
Ashton
to find
just showed
the
me
porn.
An image that was not at all as NSFW as it gets.
No, just that's sort of just, anime. Just a Deathclaw girl. Yeah.
Also, when I Googled Deathclaw sexy, and so the first thing that came up was from Reddit. Does anyone else think the Deathclaws are sexy? Question mark.
No.
Yes.
I mean, I don't, but fair play to you.
Mm.
And in an Instagram message to Kotaku, Loeb explained that he designed the Deathclaw to be beautiful and terrifying in a National Geographic sort of way. Right. I gave it a hulking, long-armed physique, a toothy scowl, and lion-like eyes that regarded the player, not with hate, but as if they were food, said Loeb.
There's a mod that you can add boobies to the Deathclaw.
Of course, yeah. But some people enjoy being looked at that way. It can be, dare I say, titillating. And if you pair that gaze with lion-like eyes and a hulking, although fit, body, well, then I can see how that might arouse your interest. Look, this is a really long article about this weird topic.
Wow. Where's that? What does it say?
Well, barely concealed areolas there of the Deathclaw.
See, I have a costume on.
I have a costume on. Now give me some sweets and candy. It's a
Halloween
themed.
Mm.
Well,
oh, God, it gets worse.
I'm
Oh my god.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Wow.
There.
As your manager, probably shouldn't be showing you that.
Adam,
Peter
showed you the sexy
work.
Bowling pin thing that time, you remember?
Oh yeah, true.
That was
yeah.
very weird.
You did it first.
I am
not going to read any more of that because it goes on and on and on, but it feels like he's sort of just reveling in the attention and it's really getting stuck
in.
He's
like, "Now let me tell you about it."
Yeah, and I gave it a long tail because it's a lizard, but also it might be a sexy tail.
Yeah.
Phallic somehow coming out the back.
That's my weird news. Let us never speak of it again.
Yeah.
It's time, everybody, for the big discussion. It's big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion that this week's comes courtesy of Richard Major. Hello, Bap.
Hello.
Hello.
Rockstar Games have announced that they'll be re-releasing Red Dead Redemption, including Undead Nightmare, in a couple of weeks. It's going to be on PS4 and Switch and costs £39.99. People complain about remakes and remasters, but this is neither. I'm getting choked up. It's just a port, and it's £40. That is pretty outrageous, right? I don't know how much money they should be charging, but you can currently buy Red Dead Redemption 2 on Amazon brand new for £17. You can buy Red Dead Revolver on PS4 from the PlayStation Store for £7.19. What are your guys' thoughts on this? Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Richard.
Got a write-up here from Push Square and Kale Adam. I've put it in the smallest font.
That is a tiny font.
I can barely read it. Take-Two Interactive is a publishing parent company on a monolithic scale with assets in excess of $15 billion. It owns two major publishing labels itself, Rockstar Games and 2K, and brought in a net income after covering all operating expenses of more than $1 billion in 2023 alone. The year's not even finished yet. It should come as no surprise then that the company is insisting that slapping a $50/£40 price tag on Red Dead Redemption's PS4 port is commercially accurate, it says in quotes. For a straight port, not a remaster. Did we mention that? No enhancements outside of text in additional languages, which, you know, is something. No 60 frames per second upgrade, enhanced assets or resolution boost, nada as far as we can tell. These kinds of things have largely become expected for re-releases in this day and age, and fans and players aren't having any of it. Speaking to IGN, Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick minced no words, declaring, "That's just what we believe is the commercially accurate price for it."
You would do. You're a millionaire.
Billionaire. Probably. It's a bold strategy, but the depressing truth is that people will likely buy it at that price point regardless. Such is the power of nostalgia and the mastery and allure of Rockstar Games. We take some comfort in the timing of this announcement, which just shows how entirely out of touch the powers that be are with the current sentiment of players on the ground.
Can I tell you what players thought when I asked them on YouTube?
Would love to hear that. How many nasty words were there?
Oh, lots. And also I made a spelling error and people start pointing that out and that made me feel bad because I made the spelling error in the picture and not in the thing, so I couldn't fix it.
No.
Yeah.
What did you put?
I forgot the M in Redemption.
Redemption.
I did it quickly before we were doing something yesterday and I missed the spelling error.
Redemption.
Anyway, the community, shockingly, generally didn't like this.
That's strange.
Everyone thought it was a piss take and they were not happy about it. People said that they would pay max. There was actually quite a lot of people said that they would pay maximum £20.
Yeah, that seems fair.
Some people were referring to the Switch tax, given that every single game on Switch tends to be more expensive and never goes on sale. People would say, is it too expensive? Yes. Am I going to buy it? Also, yes.
That's it.
There was a lot of people being Rockstar fanboys. Saying, well, it's a really good game, actually, so why wouldn't you pay for it?
In, 2011?
Yeah.
2010.
Lots of comparisons to GTA 5 and Skyrim remasters in the sense of it just feels like, it just feels like people are asking for more money for the same thing. But yeah, the general consensus, shockingly, was that people did not agree with the price tag and for not even a graphical upgrade or 60 FPS were not happy about it. Mm. Apart from the Rockstar fanboys. I love that game. I'm probably going to pay for it again.
Well, if it were cheaper, maybe. It's important to note that this is not coming to Xbox because Xbox already has a very good backwards compatible situation with Red Dead Redemption because it's currently available in 4K on Series X and 1440p for Series S.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing. I think if this was a really nice remaster, not one made by AI Rockstar, where it's a saloon in Comic Sans above the, yes. the swing doors.
Yeah.
Then maybe £40 would just be justifiable if it was a good remaster, you know, like 60 FPS, 4K, really nice looking, maybe like improvements in how it runs or whatever, because it is a beloved game and it has been 13 years since it was first released. Unfortunately, it's not a remaster, it's just a port. And yeah, I think it is too much. But what it comes down to is what you said in your write-up there, Ben, and what some people said in response to the community post, which is that some people will just pay this. And therefore, to play biggest devil's advocate, why would they not charge that much if they know that people will just buy it? They're not going to do it out of the goodness of their heart and say, you know what, we should release this for free. We should do a 13-year anniversary release and say, here you go, everyone. You can now play this for free digitally. I know no one's actually suggesting that they do that. But yeah, they're obviously out to make money. They're a business. They're just going to charge what they think they can get away with. They've probably done a bit of like focus group stuff and tried to work out what people would pay for this. And sounds like a fair amount of people will pay £40. And you're silly for doing so, I would say. Mm. I mean, you make your own decisions. It's your money. But
people bought the trilogy.
Yeah.
After the overwhelming backlash, that trilogy made them a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
The GTA trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's silly to support that kind of price tag because it just encourages that behavior to continue. Like, oh, we'll just charge 40 quid then for the next thing we release as a port with no upgrades.
Well, that's exactly the point. Someone said that they were going to buy it, and someone said, no, you shouldn't buy it. And they replied, which might be my favorite comment I've ever read in my whole life, what difference is a handsome sausage like me buying it going to make? I love this guy.
If all the handsome sausages say that.
Exactly. If all the handsome sausages decide to buy this game, then like that's the point. They're still going to make money from it. They're not going to lose any money from it because really, they've had to do is make it work on Switch, which, I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't take that much effort, but it's also a 13-year-old game. So really, it's just a matter of, I don't know how to do ports, but you know what I mean.
Press
the port button. They're not going to lose money on it, realistically.
No.
They don't need this to sell as well as if they were to release a third Red Dead Redemption game. Mm. They don't need that. So realistically, they're just kind of doing it because they know they're going to make some money from it and they're not going to lose money from it.
Mm.
And unfortunately, it is people who are handsome sausages who decide that they are going to buy it because, oh, I love that game, best game ever. Because they want it on a handheld device like the Switch, which is fair enough. But like you say, it's just too expensive. There's no reason for it to be £40. The port doesn't need to be that much money. If we're already having issues with things like The Last of Us Part 2 being remastered and potentially being listed at 70 quid, this is the way things seem to keep going, is that you can have a game and then still have to pay full price for that same game again somewhere else. And it's just like, maybe he is right. Commercially, that makes sense because that's what everyone else is doing. If you can charge this amount of money for The Last of Us remaster, then why wouldn't you charge 40 quid for a port? If that's what we're going to do with our time, if that's where we can see the market going, why are they going to be like, well, we're not going to be chumps and give our game for cheap when everyone else seems to be spending their like full price on their games and people seem to be eating it up, buying it. So that's the real issue, is that it's kind of a trickle-down effect of one does it, so why don't we just all do it? Mm-hmm. If we can make money from these games that we've already listed before, then why not just do it again? Full price. The handsome sausage will buy it, and then we'll make money. So,
I personally don't begrudge anyone who buys it, because if you really want it and you want the convenience of it on a modern-ish system, as far as PlayStation goes, then sure, whatever. It could be more expensive. Mm. It could also be a horrible remaster that barely functions.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah.
It could be worse. However, for me personally, I think I side with the majority of people here, where I think that is far too expensive. And what you're paying for is literally for the convenience of playing it on modern hardware. And that is not worth the price of admission to me. As amazing as that game is, let there be no doubt that it is a fantastic game. It's not worth that much today. It just isn't, especially when it's backwards compatible on Xbox.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could you possibly... Again, we don't know how much effort goes into porting a game like that, but truly, how much do they need to charge to make that money back and then make a profit?
Given that a game that's made from scratch will sometimes release for 40 quid.
Precisely. Yeah. I simply don't understand it. For me, it's the definition of a quick buck.
Yeah. Mm.
Because at least with the GTA trilogy, they had to have an entire studio go out of their way to mess that thing up.
Yeah.
And that would have cost money and taken time. And there was, you know, that was a huge PR disaster, and rightfully so, far more than I would imagine this is. You know, it's not nearly on that scale. But this is money for old rope. Like, it's unthinkable that you would think it okay to charge for that amount. And personally, I find it unthinkable that you would be willing to pay for that. But if you want to and you really want to play it, maybe you've never played it before, fair enough. Mm-hmm. Go for it. But I don't understand. I do not understand. And I think you're right, Ashton, when he's saying that it's the most commercially accurate price for it, that's not them being supervillain tyrants. That's them literally observing the state of the industry. People will pay for it. So it's commercially accurate because people will pay £40 for it. They will.
That is the problem, is that it is commercially accurate. What he's saying is not incorrect, because we've seen it, we've talked about it. Well, we talked about it last week, or was it last week? Or recently, about The Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this until the end of time, because it's just going to keep getting worse,
yeah,
unfortunately.
It's not as simple as voting with your wallet, because realistically, as we've spoken about before, we're in this little gamer-centric bubble, mm-hmm, and we do not represent the vast majority of people who play games, because the vast majority of people who play games do not listen to podcasts. Mm. They don't read news stories. They see Red Dead Redemption going up and they go, ooh. Or they see The Last of Us Part 2 go up and they think, well, that's too expensive still. Maybe I won't get that one. Mm. But the point is that these people are unaccounted for. Like, if all of us sat at this table and said, right, we're going to vote with our wallets, we're not going to spend any money on this, that's not going to make any difference.
What difference is a handsome sausage?
What
like
difference is a handsome sausage going to make?
Not paying for this game.
Exactly.
So ultimately, it comes down to how you feel about it and what you're most comfortable with. If you feel like not spending money on this makes you feel better about the situation, then that's what you should do. But realistically, a handsome sausage buying it and an equally handsome sausage not buying it isn't going to affect it either way.
But that is a bit of a defeatist mentality.
Oh, it is.
Consider me defeated. Because realistically, maybe this time, it doesn't make that much difference, because it's not a huge thing, this Red Dead Redemption port. But the next time something big does happen, that shouldn't turn you off from trying to make a conscious effort to not do something.
Everyone should be trying to make a difference for what they think is right.
Exactly.
That is true. However, in this instance,
it's not going to make a difference.
And that sucks, but it's not. Do keep shouting about it and complaining online. Tell your friends.
But not in a hateful way.
Don't do targeted harassment.
Don't be rude.
But like, if your friends are thinking about buying it and they're perhaps not as informed as you, maybe clue them in a bit.
Mm.
That's something you can do. Spread the word. Like, this is a ripoff, right? You know, you shouldn't. Did you hear they're releasing Red Dead Redemption for 40 quid? What? The one from like on the PS3? Mm. Yeah, that one. What? That's stupid. I didn't know that, etc.
Yeah.
Do what you think is right. I think this is way too much.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree too.
Well, let us know what you think about everything we've discussed today in the comments down below. And, you know, do stand up for the things you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to imply that you shouldn't.
No.
However, in this particular instance, they're going to sell it before you go.
Yeah.
So, Peter.
Yes.
There's some YouTubes and some Twitches.
There are YouTubes and Twitches, and we're on YouTube and Twitch. You can find us at youtube.com/TeamTripleJump and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. And did you know that if you've got Amazon Prime, part of the bundle that you are paying for includes a Twitch sub that you can spend on us? And if you don't have Amazon Prime and you're thinking about it, that's another benefit you can consider. It's not just that cheap postage. Mm-hmm. You'll also be able to get a free sub if you pay for that. So.
Twitter, Facebook, TikTok is all / Team Triple Jump on all those if you want to come and chat with us or chat with our community over there and submit weird news or anything. And also, if you want to join our Patreon, it's patreon.com/ Team Triple Jump, like we've mentioned before.
Absolutely. TripleJump.mup is our website. You can find links to everything that we do there. And why not leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice? It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms, and we'd really, really, really appreciate it. There's just enough time to talk about this week's sponsor once again, Peter.
That's right. Hey, do you hate bored chimp avatars, profile pictures? Yeah, well, you should play Maddening NFT 24. It's out like next week or something, I think.
Brilliant.
Cool.
Thank you for watching / listening, everybody. We will see you next time. Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.